Hello everybody and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. I'm your host Ant-Man and I'm once again delighted to welcome our resident shaman Heather Heaton back onto the show.
Hi Ant-Man.
That's great to have you on.
Thank you.
And it's an exciting new development with Discerning Consciousness because what we're going to do, what we've decided to do, is to serialise the teachings contained within the Celestine Prophecy, Heather.
Yes, the Celestine Prophecy. I'm not sure how many people would have heard of the series of books written by James Redfield a while back now, but I think they're as valid through any era for anybody to take notice of. So we're hoping to go through them, aren't we, and explain the whole process and the purpose.
So in this first episode, we're going to give a brief sort of summary of the Celestine Prophecy, the first book, and the nine insights. So we'll bring that to you, and also we will go into more detail on the first and second insight, Heather, and then future episodes. So it will be five in total, five episodes, so two episodes per week, five in total, where whereby we'll serialize the teachings. And just to also share with our audience, one of the main reasons from my perspective why I've wanted to bring this for quite a while now to Discerning Consciousness is because I feel that the teachings contained within the Celestine Prophecy are just, they are completely amazing, and they have the power to transform individual lives and society and culture in general. So on the micro and macro level. And for me, it's almost like, it's the Bible of spirituality. It sounds like a horrible cliche. I don't know how you feel about that, but
the teachings go back in prehistory. From prehistory, they go way, way back. But as you go through them, it's very clear that they're seriously relevant for now, for today.
Yeah.
As we go through, as we, you and I know, we are going to bring to listeners.
Yeah.
The astounding reason why it's very relevant for now. It's a very, very special era, as most people, a lot of people know, in Earth's or human evolution. And this encapsulates the how to do, the why, and where you go with it. It encapsulates the whole story for the human race, therefore the planet.
So far be it just... a fluffy story contained within it, as you were saying, Heather, is the mechanics really of how to live a more conscious life.
Well, how to join the flow of the evolution of the human being and the human nature. So many people very conscious of this process and are looking at it from different traditions and different teachings. But this particular teaching actually comes, as I said, from very ancient times, and you realise it was relevant all through the eras, but actually it's more relevant for right now, right now in this transformational time that we're in.
Because as you're saying, it brings all the ancient teachers and it, in a sort of a synergistic way, brings them all together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it brings it all together, but it challenges the person involving themselves in them to take on practices, take on ways of living and ways of understanding life that might be new to a lot of people. But by challenging us to take these practices on board, to do what we need to do to get to that stage of transformation, it means that we take responsibility.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big theme in the book, actually, isn't it? About the whole idea of personal responsibility, which I
absolutely. But it so describes how. It's the how. It's one thing to be told to take responsibility for this or take responsibility for that. It's another thing to figure out how it works within each episode or each incident in your own life, and how you deal with each emotion, and how you transform all of it. And the Celestine Prophecies the nine insights that we're going to cover makes it all very clear. It gives the opportunity to go, oh, that's how you do it. Yeah. Oh, I'll have a go with that.
Yeah, exactly. So what we bring to you now is just some background. The original book, The Celestine Prophecy, was first published in 1993 by Warner Books. And they then followed a series of three other books that were part of the series, because there was obviously insights beyond the first nine. So a book called The Tenth Insight, Holding the Vision, that was published in 1996. And then the next book in the series was The Secret of Shambhala, In Search of the 11th Insight, which was published in 1999. And then the last book in the series was called The 12th Insight, called The Hour of Decision. And that was published in 2011. And I believe, Heather, there was a couple of teaching books as well.
Yeah, there was... I want to come back to the first book in a moment, if you don't mind, Anne.
Yeah, please.
But the teaching books that were published, one was in 1995, which was The Experiential Guide.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm going to cough.
That's all right.
Excuse me. Then the second one was The Celestine Vision, which was published in 1997.
Yeah.
For those who wanted to go into depth to learn how to teach, particularly, but to go into depth.
So these were learning tools, these books.
They were real in-depth learning tools, which were very, very useful for anybody taking. I mean, a lot of people at the time did take on these books and went into them in depth, because so many people saw it as vitally important for the transformation of individual life as well as life on this planet. But if I take us back to the first one, because I feel that we missed out a bit of explanation.
Yeah, if you could give some background to our listeners, that'd be great.
The Celestine Prophecies, and you were referring to it rather than explaining it, that it is a vehicle, it is a story, or shall I say an adventure story, that we understand was created by the author, so that it acted as a vehicle to carry the reader through the teachings of each of the at least the first nine knowledges of how to transform yourself and your life. So the adventure stories, I remember at the time some people were put off by the adventure story. They just wanted to learn the teachings. Whereas I will say I thoroughly enjoyed the adventure stories.
Yes, me too.
And there were two stages of the adventure stories. There's a first stage that took you to a particular level of conclusion. And then there was another stage that went on from there with the same heroes within the story, that took you to the next level, which I think it took you on to The Secrets of Shambhala. So for those of you that like an adventure story, you would enjoy the adventure story that goes along with it.
Sure.
It's all Secret Service stuff and MI5 and God knows what else that's all involved in the Chinese.
Dan Brown-esque stuff.
Yes. but you go along with the hero who's experiencing being amongst it all and actually running for his life many a time within this book. You would enjoy that. But if you just think, oh, for goodness sake, cut to the chase, it's easy enough to pick up on the learning of the stories, and you can do it from the experiential guidebook and the Celestine Vision.
That's interesting for people to know, because obviously as we bring these teachings, serialize the Celestine, you know, we hope people do, if they are interested, to go out and buy the books, obviously purchase them online. And for some people, maybe they want to just get to the nuts and bolts of the teaching. And that's where the Celestine Vision and the Experiential Guide,
you
know, they get to the nub.
And I think there's two small hardback books
just go through the nine insights.
That are the very preceded parts of it.
Sure.
But I would urge listeners to get really deep and understand what the teachings are coming from, so to read into the whole of the teachings and really get to grips with it, because it gives you a totally new vision if you haven't already learnt these aspects of this evolving way of living and being and understanding, it gives you a complete that new vision on existence of consciousness.
And back to the book, the publication of the book, I believe there's quite an interesting little story behind its publication and the author, James Redfield, is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What do you remember of it, Anne?
Well, I believe that initially he struggled to get a publisher, and actually he was selling copies outside of the trunk, as they'd say in the States, right?
US. Oh, the car boot, as we would say.
So he was travelling across America through the States and literally giving away up to thousands of copies.
Well, the bit I heard, interesting enough, that when he first tried to get published and he couldn't get published, he then raised some savings or some money, I can't remember how now, and self-published.
Yeah.
And he had a friend, and I think his friend was a psychic or something, but, you know, in his circle of friends, one of his ladies said to him, be generous with your book. Generosity, the universe will be generous back to you.
That teaching obviously encapsulated.
Yeah. Be generous and the universe will be generous back. And I believe that this is where he then went to give out the books, literally giving them away.
Yeah.
So he'd had to...
Gifting.
Yeah. But he had to raise the money to self-publish, and then he went out all over the country giving them away.
Sure.
My understanding is that when people started to read the book, they were so impressed with the teachings and the stories within the book that they couldn't wait to pass it on to a friend. Sure. So they would pass it on to a friend, and the friends would then would talk to other friends about it, and they were really excited about it.
It's a bit like an organic viral process. We use the word to go viral
going
online.
Going viral. He went viral.
Passing it on.
Yeah, he went viral.
Organically.
Before we'd heard of the cliche in that sense.
Little story though, isn't it?
Yeah, and but what happened was that the people got impatient waiting for the book from those that were saying, oh, I got to read this. When I finished it, you must take it. You must take it.
Is that a bit like our listeners for future episodes when they're getting impatient for more stuff from Discerning Consciousness?
Well, they've got to buy the book.
No. I mean, they're demanding that we get more stuff out.
In this case, they were got very impatient waiting. Yeah. They wanted so they went to look. Where can I buy the book? Mm. And that's where the purchasing came from.
Forced the hand of the author.
And I believe then a publishing company got to hear about it. That's the story. So, but it was that phenomenal when it did hit Britain.
Yeah.
From being published, it literally hit like it went viral, because it is worth taking in. I'm just going to add something
here. You've got a cheeky look on your face.
I've got that look, haven't I?
Yeah, I don't know where it's going. Well, unfortunately, our listeners can't see it.
Don't get nervous. It's no, okay.
We might upgrade to YouTube one day and they can see our ugly mutts.
But I'm not going to say anything too rude.
No.
I'm being very polite.
No, please carry on.
Keep it clean.
Yeah.
What occurs to me is I'm a shamanic practitioner, teacher, as you know.
Of course.
I've been working with, this is not a plug for me, this is an explanation.
It's quite subtle.
and I've been training with a shamanic knowledge and experience for 3 decades, and continue to do so. And within this, I've also learnt the Peruvian, the Inca, ancient Inca, and the introduction of that has brought along the knowledge from the Amazon, which is the psychotropic drug or the herbal drug, shall we say, if there is such a thing, of ayahuasca and peyote.
Yeah.
So they're mind-altering drugs to enable people to open up to the universe or see the energy that is behind
expanded
the physical,
awareness.
The other subtle dimension.
Yeah.
there's a lot of that happening out there, and you know, it sometimes it does some bad and sometimes it does some good.
Yeah.
I understand all that, and I understand the point, and I do honor the spirit of the ayahuasca plant and the spirit of the peyote, the cactus plant, that offers this to us. And of course there we know we have magic mushrooms, don't we, in this country as a similar thing.
Yeah.
But I want to say that it isn't necessary to move forward into this greater awareness and this greater insight by using a psychotropic concoction, whether it be from the Amazon or whether it comes from the moorlands here in the form of mushrooms.
Poetic.
It makes no difference. It isn't necessarily necessary. It can be fast track, but there is shifting your own perception in a disciplined way. Fast track, I've done it myself. I have been on a course, and it's a fast track course to open up awarenesses so that you can see beyond the physical and have visions beyond the physical. You can do it without psychotropic concoctions. This Celestine Prophecy also offers you a way of opening up your conception and your view and your vision
and
what else there is in a very organic but self-training way. And it's a beautiful way to do it too. It's an enjoyable way to do it. So I just wanted to make sure that anybody listening understood that while we accept the psychotropic ingredients that there are to be had out there, it's quite interesting to, if you've not done any of the psychotropic, try this first, is what I'm saying, because it gives you an awareness of yourself and a process of yourself of opening up to these other insights, these other awarenesses that remains with you. Whereas I always think that with the psychotropic, it doesn't necessarily remain with you.
No.
You have to then depend on the psychotropic to open you up again. But anyway, that's just the way
Since that's important.
Yeah, so I just think it's important to people to be aware of there are choices out there.
Yeah.
We Westerners are one for jumping for the easy route, which seems like swallowing this ghastly stuff that makes you sick and then have some amazing insight or a nightmare.
Yeah, spin the wheel, you never know quite what you're
going to see where it lands.
I wonder if I could just bring us back again to James Redfield and the story of the Celestine Prophecy, and this idea from an esoteric level that humanity, the reason why it became viral was humanity was ready for this ancient knowledge. Is that true?
Well, yes, definitely. If you look at the story and you have a sort of an insight to the coincidence of the process, where the whole book went viral, you begin to realise that James Redfield had a choice. Redfield had a choice. He had a choice of writing this book and developing it, and then trying to find a publisher, not finding one, and then just giving up. But he didn't.
No.
Then the next stage was, how do I get it out there? Because now I have to self-publish, because that's the only way forward. So he chose the way forward, self-publishing. But how does he get it out there? Is he trying to make money out of it, or is he trying to get the message out there? And of course, for him, it was really more important to get the message out there. So he gave away thousands of books. And that's what, but he could have otherwise just not giving out and
could
just keep trying. He could have just kept trying to sell it to people around him, shall I say. But he didn't. He did the open, progressive, generous and wider view approach. And so what he did, he aided the universe.
He played his part and then the universe assisted. Yeah.
Exactly. The universe was waiting and ready, because the human race was ready for such a teaching to come to them at that time. He played his part so well, then the universe took it.
The word that springs to mind is beneficence. In other words,
beneficence. Yeah. Do we know what that means?
Yeah, well, the universe was being beneficent.
Benevolent. Benevolent. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah.
Well, yes. It was ready. It was waiting, and he instinctively listened to what he needed to listen to, and did what he needed to do. Mm. And it meant a bit of sacrificing when he had to find the money to publish.
Of course.
But he could feel that it was necessary to get the story out there, to get the information out there. Mm. And so he did all it took. And the universe then took over because, well, he enabled the universe, sure, who was waiting,
yeah, sure,
instead of holding it back or,
sure,
resisting.
And it's important to tell the listeners that throughout this serialisation, which will be 5 separate episodes, obviously beginning today, where we'll get on in a moment into the actual insights themselves, and we'll look at the first and second insight in greater detail. We will look at just interesting aspects of the Celestine, where the word comes from, the story of Saint Celestine. We'll be going into that in future episodes, yeah, won't we?
Very interesting story. You do realise that it involves the Christian priests,
really,
that,
wow,
fled.
I didn't know that.
That flooded through a lot of areas of the world to try and bring the Christian message,
really,
and, wow, also to educate sort of the more pagan thinking people. It very involved.
Sure.
Very,
I look forward, very involved. To, and our listeners are, yeah, going to hearing more about that.
Yeah.
In our next episode of this serialization process. So I wonder now, Heather, if it'd be okay for our listeners, if we'll run through the 9 insights. Is that okay?
Okay, we'll go through them,
yeah,
fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And this is just, shall I say, just a headline,
sure,
of
notes,
what each one is.
It'll be useful for our listeners.
Yeah. So this is what we're planning to do, is to, this episode,
yeah,
to cover the first and second insights. The first insight,
yeah,
is teaching the knowledge of synchronicity, and that is noticing the coincidences,
right,
and I think it's also about believing in the coincidences,
okay,
and enabling that to be part of your life, and we'll go into detail of why it makes a huge,
yeah,
difference.
Yeah, a few questions I'll ask when we go into more in depth. Mm. On the first one. Thank
then
you.
The second one is called The Longer Now. I love that phrase.
Very mystical.
The Longer Now.
Yeah.
which means understanding the fuller picture of what came before us.
Yeah.
So that we know that we're a part of that flow.
Yeah.
And what it is. So where we are in the evolution of existence.
Mm.
Therefore, we're able to understand where we're going.
Do you mean, Heather, also, just in the terms of how culture changes as well. So
it's about culture,
yeah,
change.
Yeah.
And it's about understanding culture change,
sure,
and being part of it.
Sure.
And then it's easier to see where it's heading to.
Because, of course, you know, the Celestine prophecy, we've been talking about the mystical element, awakening to our higher consciousness, connecting to the divine, whatever phrases you want to use. But this is much a story about humanity, and, you know, we can think of how the role of women has changed. That's a fascinating story.
And so,
you know,
what I'm hearing you say, which I would agree with, that it really does give you the down to earth understanding,
absolutely,
of this evolution,
yeah,
of ascendancy that we hear a lot about now,
yeah,
all of these rather wonderful esoteric approaches to the whole transformational time that we're in,
yeah.
It is interesting when you look at it from a historical point of view, it grounds it.
Yeah.
It enables you to keep steady in your understanding rather than running away with the fairy, shall we
say.
Yeah,
that's great. So next one, we've got the third insight, Heather.
Yeah, and the third and fourth insight, we'll go into detail next time.
Yeah.
And the third is seeing the field of energy.
Mm.
And it means enabling, well, seeing the world differently, but it's seeing, it's the practice of studying the landscape on the plants, trees, and begin to see the auric energy comes off of them, but without ayahuasca, without a psychotropic drug, but shifting your brain brainwave patterns for yourself.
Can I just check, Heather, with you? Do you mean like that sort of white, smoky sort of film almost that you see behind? I know if you, like locally, sometimes I've gone in the forest and I've just tried to concentrate and you can see this like white, smoky, shimmery, almost sheen behind the plants.
That's the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, there's more.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Technicoloured.
Oh, yes. And yeah. I'm not joking.
Really?
Really.
Gosh.
This is what some people have seen when they've taken ayahuasca that I've heard. I mean, very few people see this vision, and it has been written in somebody, in a book of somebody's experience.
Mm.
But that's what I think a lot of people go for when they take ayahuasca and peyote, because they want to be able to see that.
Mm.
But very few people do.
Mm.
But the practice here is to start practicing to see, and how, I mean, it depends on where you are, etc. as well. But it actually to see the rainbow colours coming off of plants and trees.
Mm.
But there's more that I can explain about how once you are able to open up your brainwave patterns and your optics of your eyes to see these things, you will actually see how insects connect with these energies.
Okay.
I have a little story that sure. I will tell at a later
is that the
day.
Story of the bee.
That's the story of the bee. Yeah,
we'll talk about that later. Next time.
It's what somebody experienced when they practiced opening up their sight to these wonders.
If we could just move on to the fourth insight now, then
struggle for power. It's called struggle for power. Now this is coming to the human being and the human nature.
Psychology.
Yeah, very down to earth now. It's how humans compete with energy, and I will tell you that one day, out of the blue, for some reason, I did see two people's energy and one person that was grabbing energy.
Oh, you literally
and
saw
their
it.
Aura projection turned into a hand.
Oh my God.
But like a silvery hand. It's like that misty thing that you were talking about.
Sure.
And was grabbing the energy of the other person. I mean, I blinked and tried to see it
wiped
again.
Your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. It was quite a shock to see it, to see that. And there was the human interaction at the time of the person standing over, the person grabbing the energy was standing over the person who was sitting down.
Yeah.
And they were having a bit of a to and fro, politely.
Tete-a-tete. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is what it's about. It's about how humans compete with each other for energy. For superiority.
Yeah.
For recognition.
Sure.
And it really opens you up to an awful lot of ego stuff that we're seeing in our world today, in the media, in popularity, on the internet. You know, there's an awful
cult of celebrities, all based
it's very interesting. The minute you open yourself up to that struggle for power knowledge, remember, this knowledge came from a very long time ago.
Sure.
Very, very long time ago. It's absolutely right
it's
for today.
It's so profound, because the way I see it, and we will move on in a second to the fifth one, this power struggle, it's once we recognise how when we argue with people, we're draining their energy, it's such a profound thing.
Protect ourselves from being drained.
Yeah, or protect ourselves from being drained.
But the more we're conscious of it, the more we can find the happy medium.
Sure.
We can figure out how not to be in the power struggle. And it is about not putting up the barriers to people. It's about enabling people with your own energy rather than...
I mean, for me, as I was going to say, the profoundness of the fourth insight, the struggle for energy, is how I feel that once we... enough people have that awareness, I feel that's how we will. It sounds a bit woo-woo, forgive me. You know I'm not woo-woo. I'm quite cynical, really, aren't I?
Very cynical.
Very cynical. Just to put it out there for our listeners. But I feel that's how we will eventually heal the planet, because it's all about our, you know, interpersonal interactions. And then it's just when that's magnified on the macro level, that's what leads to war and hatred. Mm. But if we can heal... you know, micro interactions with people. I just think, you know.
But you really get that from the book that's called The Secret of Shambhala.
Okay.
In fact, when I first read Shambhala, The Secret of Shambhala, I just thought, oh my God, we've gone over the top here. This is going woo-woo.
That's the 11th insight, just so our listeners know.
It's going over the top.
Yeah.
But, you know, after a time, I got it. I really, really got it. Yeah. And I understand what it's talking about now.
Yeah.
That we will cover later. But if people want to, I urge people to read through the series of books before they get to Shambhala.
Sure.
Or Shambhala perhaps won't actually make a lot of sense.
Or the other thing is also...
But the stories that James Redfield have written is to take us to understand that's where we're going.
Sure. And also for those from who just said, already maybe have very dusty, moth-eared covers of the copies of the book, obviously we would encourage you to read through them before we cover them on Discerning Consciousness, and the fact that, you know, we're going through this, it may reignite your own interest.
That's what we hope. Because it's been about 20 years, isn't it?
More than 20
since they were
years.
Out and about, and we do drift onto many other things.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're reconnected, you remember that there's something that you haven't been doing for a long time, some practice, some centering, some awareness, and quite inspirational to go forward in your life sometimes.
Because I know, just quickly to bring an anecdote from myself in relationship to the book, I know that when I get a little bit confused as to how to progress on the path, you know, and I'm unsure of, well, what should I be studying, you know, what inspiration should I be drawing on, I always go to my copy of the book, delve in, it's like, oh yes, you know, I'm going to look in this area or that. It always inspires me.
It creates clarity for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not sort of lost or drifting anymore.
No.
You're motivated to go forward again.
That's the key word.
That's worth knowing. Yep.
To the fifth insight, Heather.
Okay. The mystical experience.
Yeah.
And the mystical experience is about how once you gone through the previous practices, because you can't jump to the last insight and practice that alone.
No.
It literally is a progression that you do with yourself.
Mm.
And the fifth is, if you've got on board those practices that the previous insights give you, it's possible then to find yourself literally feeling connecting with the universe or with the holiness,
right?
The divine, excuse me, creation, the creative power, the creative source, whatever you want to call it, God or the goddess. But in doing so, that you find that you're connecting with the whole of existence, whole of life, whole of humanity, with the planet, with the absolute holiness that there is. It takes you on to how this experience can come about.
Okay, it's interesting. So if we move on to the sixth insight, Heather.
Human evolution through a synergy of parental legacy.
Ooh, we call it. That needs some explanation.
Doesn't it?
Please,
just
for me and our listeners.
Okay, it's sort of to say, what contribution have each of your parents brought to who you are now and what you're going to do with it?
Can I also add, is it about taking their unlived legacy forward in some
way? It's getting to know who and what, who they are, understanding what their achievements were and what they didn't achieve.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But each one individually, then seeing within yourself what is it you are frustrated about, or what you want to achieve, or what you are trying to achieve, what you feel that you feel needing to do or urge, and you'll probably find out is very much connected with what each of your parents didn't achieve and would have achieved if they had the opportunity.
I know that.
And it's learning how to identify, and then minute you identify, I'm sorry to interrupt,
that's okay.
But once you identify, and so it's a process how you do this, which we will go through. Once you identify these parts of your parental experience in life, and once you encapsulate them, you'll suddenly find out that that's what your drives are. It's the combination are your drives. It's a very it can be unsettling because you think, oh my goodness, that is me. That is me. And you suddenly realise that you are the next generation expression of the ancestors who are your parents.
The point I was going to make is when you have that realisation, I know myself and for other people, it can be really uncomfortable. Because for a lot of us, we want to distance ourselves from our parents.
For all the negatives and all of the difficulties and the struggles. Or sometimes if your parents have passed on to the spirit world, to look at what they didn't achieve, if you had a really close relationship with them, is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, actually, I don't want to look at that.
No.
But going through the process that this insight gives you, it brings you to an absolute realization of who you are and what you are and what you can achieve and what you feel driven to achieve. And it enables you to feel whole and complete to go forward with.
Just last point, really, obviously, because we need to move on the sixth insight, is in shamanism, I know this idea of healing the relationship with your parents is key, isn't it? It's absolutely key in the healing process, this idea of cutting of the ties.
In shamanism.
In shamanism, yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, we haven't got time to go into it, but that's what, you know, well, comes to my mind.
I will say that the experience that I have gone through healings, is to find out that most people need to do some sort of healing with their parents in some way, shape or form.
It's obvious,
whether
isn't
they've
it?
Passed on, whether they're still alive. There is some sort of healing process to do in some way, shape or form. Mm. And I'm not saying that it's all about having bad parent experiences.
No.
It's just coming to terms with certain aspects at certain times with parents, with loving relationships with their offsprings as well. But yes, tends to be a key part of ourselves.
Just very lastly on the human evolution, the sixth insight, just to bring to the awareness of our listeners, I know that Carl Jung, the great Carl Jung, has some of his writings. He goes in depth on this issue. So if they want to find out more about the importance of our relationship with our parents and healing them, he talks about that in some of
his
writings.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good advice. Amazing.
So if we can move on now, Heather, thank you, to the seventh.
The seventh, engaging with the flow. It's so easy to go through these practices. And you know, if you're doing them, because I say going commando, so it's like it's without the psychotropic drugs, it's literally doing it for yourself. Keep these practices going, keep the discipline going, to go through these things, to get to a certain stage, it's hard to keep it going.
Are you talking about where we do have to have discipline to do the practices? And also, I know when you've worked with me and on various courses that you've run, that I've been on, shamanic courses, the difficulty I have is to really immerse myself in the process.
Consistently.
Keep
the level up, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the insights also recognise how easy it does say that at some point you have this amazing experience of engaging with what shall we call the flow.
Yeah.
This flow of energy that is behind usual human psychology. Human society, human physical life is a certain awareness and concentration that we place upon it. But this is all talking about the energy that's behind that we don't always see. If we concentrate on human culture of ordinary society, if we concentrate on the physicality of life, just basics of it, going to work and getting up and dealing with the kids and doing the laundry.
Sure. You're also talking about,
paying the bills.
Newtonian physics, this idea that there's sort of, nothing beyond the physical and what we can see.
Yeah, this is to do with what is beyond that, behind it, shall we say, the other expression of life that's the more subtle. And it going through this process can take you very organically onto this, so that you're completely connected with the energy and the flow that's behind, which gives you the synchronicity, it gives you the insights, it gives you the understanding, and it lifts you what feels like a heavy type of life, a struggle type of life.
Yeah.
It lifts you and it inspires you and it makes you, enables you to feel everything's possible. It empowers you totally.
Mm.
It's very hard to keep it going. And when you don't keep it going, you lose touch with that flow, that synchronicity, those insights. They suddenly disappear. And it is also teaching that human beings need to learn how to get up on that flow and how to stay up on that flow,
sure,
because we're not used to it. So it teaches you how to do this.
So Heather, am I right in thinking when we cover the seventh insight in greater detail in a future episode, that we'll obviously give a little bit of an insight, pardon the pun, in terms of how people can actually do that? Because it sounds fantastic.
That's engaging, what this teaching, this teaching is for. That's what it's all about.
Sure.
Right, so let's go on to
the eighth,
yes. It's taking responsibility for our own psychology and therefore our understanding of our own emotional selves.
And our emotional baggage.
And our baggage and taking responsibility. And therefore, how we interact with it with others and our expectation of others, for instance.
Can I just ask you a question? Do you think that's running counter to the cultural norm where it's all about the blame game? So it's, he did that to me, she did that. And where, as a culture, we're not encouraged to look at our own role. And this is saying, what role did I play in that, in making those circumstances come about?
Yeah. That's why it's called the interpersonal ethics. And that's what the eighth is. It's looking at the truth of the personal ethics of how you conduct yourself in life with other people, and that's much easier to go through when we actually go into it rather than talk about it in a thumbnail way here,
which we will do, go into greater detail. And then lastly, we got the ninth insight, Heather.
Yes, to get to the ninth insight, which is the emerging culture. So it's talking about the more people that walk this way in their lives, transform themselves in this way.
Sure.
And it's relevant to critical mass, which comes up in the first one.
Sure. Is this how society is in the process of changing then? Is that what this talks about, or the emerging culture, is that what it means?
It's trying to say that the more people that follow this knowledge and this understanding and go through this change within themselves and their understanding, then what we have then is the emergence of a completely new culture.
Okay.
The mass, that if we get to a point of critical mass of people following this knowledge and moving forward on this understanding and this change within themselves, we get to a point of critical mass, which means the majority of the, I think it's a percentage, isn't it? Sure. I'm not sure what it is. Yeah. You get to a percentage of people within the population.
Is the 100th monkey syndrome.
Exactly, the 100th monthly syndrome.
The
100th monthly, and it becomes... it becomes the norm in our society, then we have a new culture.
Mm.
So it's called the emerging culture.
Mm.
It's the way forward for the human race.
Mm. Well, I do await that.
Right.
With bated breath, quite frankly.
Yes. And the whole point is to take us to a stage of illumination or transcendence or ascension. Or enlightenment, whichever you want to call
it. But what I like about the fact that it's the ninth insight, so much of the New Age spiritual fluff stuff is offering it at stage one through this practice or this pill.
Different practices.
This yoga meditation. What I like is, there's a natural progression. There's an initiatic process, if you will,
which is
very strong in the book.
Yeah.
He goes through trials and tribulations.
Yes.
He doesn't just go, to a spiritual group
in the book
and evolve. You know?
Yeah, we're talking about the hero of the book
hero
now.
Of the book,
yes,
yeah.
The hero of the book. He goes through all these difficulties. So he experiences the difficulties to show you when you're going through the practices for yourself by following the story of how it teaches it. it shows that the hero within the book also goes through the difficulties. It isn't always easy, but it's going through the difficulties that teaches him and takes him on to the next stages. And so I think the individuals that's following the book teaching for themselves can also expect to go through those difficulties, and it's okay. It's okay to go through them.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it would be okay if I just share briefly, Heather, if that's okay with you, how and why the book first gripped me, because it might be interesting.
Please tell to the listeners. So I'm curious to know.
So I first read the book back in 1996, so 3 years after it was published, and I was really taken in and enthralled by the story. Really, I was just fascinated by the story.
What, the adventure?
The adventure story. I have to say,
I enjoyed it.
The whole spiritual, esoteric dimension completely passed me by. I know that sounds a rather strange thing to say, because at the time in 1996, I was very much interested in politics, and you know, I had no interest in, as I said before, spiritualism or the idea of spiritual awakening. I had no idea what it even meant. I probably would have just dismissed it as being woo-woo. So, and back in 1996, just to give a little bit of context, it was the death throes of the John Major government, and waiting in the wings was New Labour's Tony Blair. So I was all excited at the prospect of Tony Blair coming into power. Sounds pathetic.
You've been quite a political animal, haven't you, in your earlier decades?
Sounds pathetic now, doesn't it? But how we evolve and change.
Yeah, but this is out there now in the era of Trump.
Yes.
Being the president of America.
Sure.
And we have our lady prime minister again, or stand-in
Thanks
prime
for
minister.
Reminding our UK listeners.
So you know what you experienced then, I think that a lot of people are experiencing now.
Sure. I call it a crisis of politics, because what's happened with Brexit and the election of Trump, as I've mentioned in previous episodes of Discerning Consciousness, is people's faith in the system is being shaken. It really is. You know, people are being shown that, do you know what, actually we're not going to change the world through politics. It's not going to happen. It's going to happen through people integrating and going through the insights. You know, that's how, and then the culture will change, and then politics will change. It's not
politics comes afterwards from the cultural raised awareness change,
exactly.
Shall I say.
When we get to that.
Remember, now we're very focused in the Western world on politics, which is also drawing in the Eastern world on politics because of these big shocks that are going on in politics. That we're having a mass of people focusing back on the politics through insecurity and disagreements. So it's really raised the temperature, and so it's like you were saying, it would be wonderful for more people to turn to understanding these teachings and understand that the change within
We'll bring the change without.
We'll bring the change without.
Sure.
And we're not quite looking at that at the moment,
no.
En masse. So I should imagine an awful lot of people have switched their attention to the political outward.
Well, everyone at the moment, and we'll end at this point, because we don't want to talk too much about Brexit or Trump, is people, so many people are still in the blame game.
Yeah.
You know, these well-intentioned, you know, liberal lefties that are coming out and saying how evil Trump is. For me, they're not aware of the longer now. They're playing the blame game.
Yes.
They don't get it. They don't understand.
And your awareness and what really brought you to the Celestine Prophecy and excites you about Celestine Prophecies is, if you'd like to recap
if I can, to answer your question, I need to zoom forward 10 years. So we're going from 1996 to 2006. And that was just the year where I began to get heavily into conspiracy research. So I was looking at, you know, looking at why the world seems so crazy, what forces were at play, as I say, from a conspiratorial angle.
So becoming discontent.
Becoming, which is a key part of, obviously, when you're on the path, is that discontent. And just to tell you a little anecdote, I was with a friend and we were in Portsmouth, and we were walking to a pub, and this young girl, she ran out of her house. She ran in front of us. She was crying. We walked up to her and started talking to her. And she said she was having this massive argument, with her boyfriend. They were in the throes of a breakup. So we walked with her. Sounds really dodgy, actually. It wasn't. forgive me, listeners.
Oh, this is great. This is.
And then we walked to a local
magazine
pub.
Stuff. Yeah,
we walked to a local pub and we started talking to her, and she opened up to me and she was saying. And she mentioned the fact that she just started reading Celestine Prophecy. Now, at the time, I hadn't read it for 10 years. Other things had happened, and I hadn't visited it for 10 years. And she was saying, you know, there's all these crises going on in her life, primarily the relationship with her boyfriend. And she just started reading this book, and it brought my awareness and attention back to it. How by, you know, when people are in a state of crisis like she was, and I was very much at the time in a state of crisis in that, you know, how I thought the world was completely untrue. And my whole, you know, my whole perspective on myself and life was just being shaken to the core. Now, it was happening to this young girl in a different way because of a crisis with her boyfriend. But she was drawn to the book, and it's like she re-triggered my interest. And she was talking to me, and, you know, her perception on life was beginning to shift because of being triggered by the crisis with the relationship with her boyfriend. And this was a very modest young girl. She wasn't spiritual. She was just, you know, a very everyday kind of human being. I hate using that phrase, but you know what I mean.
Wasn't
mystical, but she had somehow been drawn to this book, and she reawakened my interest in the book as well. And it was really quite, there's that sort of synchronistic element to it, if you like, you know.
And do you remember when you then picked the book up again?
Yeah.
After that experience, after that event,
yeah.
What did it do for you? I think I'm trying to say.
What it did for me is
when
it kind of
re-looked at the book, what happened?
It contextualised where I was at that point. Does that make sense? So,
could you explain that, please?
What I mean was, I felt that by reading through the different insights, it's almost like I was able to say, well, I'm in this position in my life, okay, I'm having these certain awarenesses coming to me, and it feels really dark, because when you first get into conspiracy research, obviously it's quite a dark, it's very shadow work.
Causes a lot of problems in a lot of people's lives.
By looking at the Celestine Prophecy, I could see a way out. It took me quite a few years to reach it, as you well know.
Okay.
I could track a way out. Do you see what I mean?
Yes,
that's what I was able to do.
Yes.
Because I could see, well, I'm in this position now, but as my understandings develop and grow, then I will move forward. And that's through reading the story and taking on board the teachings from the nine insights. Does that help?
Can I ask you if what you're saying is that you were easily going into a darker area of the conspiracy theories?
Yeah.
And at that point, it didn't feel good for you.
No.
But going back to the Celestine Prophecy teachings, it gave you a place of truth.
Yes, I would say that. It's a great analysis, yeah.
Would it be?
Yeah,
because that's what it is.
Because I'd lost that, because I was very much being pulled emotionally by reading all this material online, where a lot of it, as you know, and our listeners, some of our listeners will know, there's no way of proving this information, or a lot of it, it's not balanced by more lighter information. It gives it context, if you will, you know.
So you were actually to say, well, no, hang on a minute. This is where I am, and this is who I am.
Mm.
So if I stay on track with this, I will get to a complete place of truth, and that truth can't be shaken.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah.
And therefore, I can start to see the wood for the trees rather than feel lost in a place that I'm not
than
sure of anymore.
The whole world is calling, closing in on you, kind of thing. So,
yeah,
it was that chink of light.
Yeah,
it really did give me that chink of light. As I said before, it took me 4 years probably to find my way out, 4 or 5 years. But it definitely, and that's why now I often, as I said before, I will often revisit the book when I feel a bit lost on my journey.
Mm.
And it's like, oh no, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it quantifies every part of human experience.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Listening to you, that's very clear to me now.
Mm.
It gives quantifying and validation to the true human experience and the true evolution of the human experience.
Can I put
experience?
It another way, if it's
Please
okay?
Please do.
It's almost like you can track where you are in a way. I know it sounds.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. It's very interesting.
What
though.
I mean is by looking at the book, wherever you are on the journey, and then you relate it to the nine teachings, you can go, oh, okay. So I'm in that state of consciousness, or do you know what I mean, in terms of tracking where you are on the progression through the insights, if that makes sense.
So if you feel a bit lost, you look at the insights and you can think, oh God, that's the bit I'm battling with now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I am
now. Or you
now.
Might be, you know, you might be battling with the parental stuff or another issue. It might be a combination, but that's a very good way.
Or trust that there is another area and you've lost taking notice of the synchronicities.
Sure.
This is what you're talking about. Sure. You can actually look and think, no, that's where I've got lost and I need to go back to there. I need to go back
to
there.
Or an area you need to revisit. So.
Yes. So there might be a part of it that you've only done partly of if you've followed the insights and you suddenly realise that later day that you actually got to go back to it because you've not gone... You've not done the complete...
Yeah, that's a very good explanation.
Insight into it or investigation into it. Okay.
I wonder, Heather, now if we can, in the last part of this episode, what we're going to go on to explore is just go into a little bit more detail on the first and second insight. And I believe you've got some information to share on those with our listeners.
Yes. I want to say also, to begin with, that... this is being taught and told by James Redfield that it's about a complete spiritual culture here on earth, but it doesn't undermine any church's principles at all.
Right.
It clarifies what is meant by spiritual truths.
Right.
That's all it does.
Yeah.
So we're not detaching ourselves and suggesting that anybody's faith in any religion that they are members of, that this is not in contest to it at all.
Are you saying that they can carry on and that can run alongside?
This can run alongside it, no trouble. And if somebody tries it, they can prove it.
I think that's some important information to share,
It's to grow through a positive psychological contagion amongst people. This is what we're hoping for, or the books are hoped for. A new awareness called transcendence transcendent. Yes, a kind of renaissance in consciousness. So it's not religious, it's spiritual. It's the real world that is changing. That's how we see it. So the first insight...
That's a nice little pricey. Thank you.
First insight, it's related to critical mass, as I spoke about before.
Yeah.
Synchronicity, intuition. It's the manuscript of the Celestine Prophecies. This is not something that we've explained so far, that it's about... manuscript that Saint Celestine wrote quite some time ago, but we will come back to that some of that later today.
Yeah.
The manuscript dates back to about 600 BC, written in Aramaic.
Yeah.
It predicts a mass transformation in human society, which is supposed to be beginning in the last two decades of the 20th century. Which is sort of now, and we've just
forwarded a bit,
gone past those just.
Yeah.
A kind of renaissance in consciousness occurring very slowly. And as we said, not religious in nature, but spiritual. We are discovering something new about human life on this planet, about what our existence means. And according to the priest, Saint Celestine, this knowledge will, after human culture, dramatically change. Human beings will become, will grasp these insights sequentially, that is one after another, until a completely spiritual culture comes upon in human nature on this earth. That's what it is.
Can I be a bit provocative? Some of our listeners or people listening in the future might say, that's all very well, Heather Heaton. I don't see this change in society. All I see is more war, poverty, destitution, shrinking welfare state, you know, more unconscious behaviours from people. And we know part of that is because we get, I would argue that we get an unfair impression of the world through the mainstream media. So how would you answer someone that challenged us, you know, sharing this information about this, you know, change in the culture and this sequential, you know, growth in terms of human evolution and consciousness, and they will come and say, well, I don't see it reflected in my life.
The more people that take responsibility for themselves going through these transformations, the more we'll get to a point of that percentage, which is critical mass.
Right.
But once you get to critical mass, it's the, what is it, the 100th monkey syndrome.
Yeah.
Literally, this is known in history. This is understood in science. This it's understood that once you get a percentage of a population of any animal, actually, but like in the human race, has gone through a particular change and going into a particular way of being or a typical
existence.
A particular existence or process or a habit,
yeah.
Then the rest of the society of those animals, then it tumbles through all of them.
Sure.
Quite organically, and this has been seen by monkeys, happening to monkeys, and this is why it's called the 100th monkey syndrome.
Yeah.
It's understood that once one group of monkeys gets to a certain level of a new learning, a process of learning, some skill, it spreads beyond that, even with monkeys that are not living on the same island.
So this
island.
Is a process that science, mainstream science, can explain. Is that correct?
That this has been monitored by mainstream science.
Mm.
They are very perplexed on how this happens,
I'm sure.
But it's been seen to happen.
Yeah.
That monkeys beyond... So if you have a monkey on an island, it spreads right through the monkeys on an island, but then it spreads beyond on the mainland, even if the monkeys on the mainland are not in contact with those on the island. The new knowledge just travels through. This has been seen in human nature, where you will find some scientists will make a new discovery, or but those creating new things, technically, shall we say, or a new design or something, you'll find at least one person in several countries will come up with this new idea, this new design, this new development at the same time, when they're not even in contact, because it's an evolution process.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is there is obviously a great deal of distress going on in the world at this time, although a lot of people see... I know a lot of people say it's worse at this time.
Mm.
I do question that.
Mm.
We have a communication network now,
yes.
Which gives us insights to all sorts of things
maybe
that we didn't have before.
Gives a false impression, perhaps.
If you imagine the horrors that there were in the times of the Knights Templars trying to gain back the Holy Land from the Arabian people, etc.
That might be some knowledge that our listeners on Discerning Consciousness will want you to share in future episodes.
With the Knights Templars.
I'll make a little note of that.
Well, perhaps not there. But there was masses of strife going on in Britain as a consequence, and in Europe, etc. There was a lot going on.
Think of periods like the Black Death.
So much happened in so many parts of the world that wasn't a collective knowledge and an instant collective knowledge, and it wasn't therefore comparable at earlier times. So I do question the fact that we're having a worse time.
I know it's quite a simplistic,
humanically
way of seeing things, but I just
this
wanted
might
to throw
be the
it in
case,
there.
And the case. Therefore, there is a theory at this time that this is all to do with the transformational time that we're going through, the ascension time that we're coming to. The ascension time that we're coming to is therefore there's as more people come, shall we say, into a more advanced stage or into the light, whatever phraseology you want to use, then also we have a counterproductive element within our society throughout the world that is going becoming more destructive, shall we say.
Is this a process whereby, again, it sounds like a cliche because you hear it a lot, where we're in a process where the light is becoming lighter and the dark is becoming darker and dense, more dense.
Allegedly. Yeah. Yes, a lot of people do believe this. Again, that sounds quite simplistic. And who knows? Mm. And it's also seen as the duality of our of our planet, of our existence. Who knows? Mm. It's down to everybody to figure that out for themselves. Mm. But what I do know is, in answer to your question, is if everybody took it upon themselves, which is the Mahatmas, that Gandhi's teachings, that everybody should just take responsibility for the transformation within themselves. Be as you want the world to be, was his teachings. To do that, we will get to the 100th monkey syndrome and critical mass, which is what the Celestine prophecy of the first insight is talking about.
So have you got any more information to share on the first?
I've got some stuff. I'm going to read through it and can discuss it as we go, Ant, if that's all right with you. Yeah. Okay, here. This is very much coming from the books as well. It's not necessarily just my words. It's mostly from the books.
Yeah.
So you will recognise it. Anybody reading the books will recognise this. Okay. The first insight. Surfaces in individuals as a restlessness, which is what you were talking about, definitely. Interestingly. People aren't sure what they are looking for at first, but are beginning to glimpse an alternative kind of experience. Moments in our lives that seem different somehow, more intense and inspiring. But we don't know what this experience is or how to make it last. When it ends, we're left feeling dissatisfied and restless with a life that seems ordinary again. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, I
with
can.
Your memory of what you've experienced.
Yeah, I mean, when I've been on the spiritual path, sounds a bit grand, doesn't it? There is certain moments I can remember, like being on workshops when you're with people who are of a higher state of consciousness, and you just feel healthier, you feel lighter, and then when you go back to your normal everyday world, in my particular instance, 9-to-5 office world, with people in that office environment who aren't on the path, okay, and who are, I don't mean to horrible or discriminate, but do have a lower level of consciousness, you can feel yourself begin to dip, you know. And I understand from the teachings, it's actually about being able to keep yourself at that high level of consciousness and awareness and just health and vitality.
And I would call, rather than a lower level of consciousness, I would call that people are disconnected with that flow of energy that's behind the surface, physical and society of life, social world. And that's what we're talking about.
And I think we've had conversations where we've been on the same workshops and, you know, we've experienced this.
There's some sort of connectiveness you make, and that is such a pathetic
it can be connecting with the landscape
if you don't experience it.
Can be
it.
Connecting with, you know,
people
that are on the workshop,
their energy systems that are raised. When your energy system is raised and you're connecting with them, it all helps us all to raise together, and you go to a higher place, and that's when some of these remarkable things that you can experience by doing these practices can really take place when you're in groups of people. But yes, it's like you say, you go to workshops where there's a whole bunch of people that are walking in the same direction or on the same path, shall we say. You can have these experiences. And then you come away, you go to work and you get back to all the mundane stuff and you go, down you go again. And you want it. And it is about health because while you're walking on that flow with others, it raises your wellness, your health, and it's the direction that human beings are supposed to be going in, and it enables everybody to understand that their lives now make sense. things in their lives make sense, and what doesn't make sense, they're able to let go and do, so it isn't sort of like having a high, like a psychotropic drug.
No.
It's not like having a high. It's raising your energies and your energy levels to a healthier level. So I'm going to go on reading this. It says here, we're all looking for more fulfillment in our lives, and we won't put up with anything that seems to bring us down, which is what we've just spoken about. This restless searching is what's behind the me first attitude that has characterized recent decades. It's affecting everyone from Wall Street to street gangs. And when it comes to relationships, we're so demanding that we're making them near impossible. And I think we can all see something of that around us.
Of course, in your work as a shamanic healer and practitioner, you know, a lot of people that come to you obviously going through crises in their marriages or relationships.
Well, they tend to go in crises like, who am I? What am I here for? What's the point? Yeah. And I feel that there's something I should be doing that's important.
Yeah.
And I get that happen time after time after time. And for me, it's great to recognise, because people are at that turning point.
Yeah.
There's only forward as far as I'm concerned. So, yes, I see it a lot. Mm. Right, I've just to find out where I was on this. Wall Street, right. This situation will come to an end. It is temporary. Mm. So this is the teaching saying that this is an episode that the mass of human race are going through at this time.
We will transition through it.
And it will do, particularly if we take responsibility and take it forward, take ourselves forward rather than worry too much about what other people are doing. Yes, we can be concerned. Yes, we can watch it.
Sure.
But we have to do for ourselves what we want to see happen beyond us.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's being more selfless rather than selfish.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's but taking responsibility, I think. Yes. Right. Well, so it's looking for what is a more fulfilling experience and what that really is. And when we have grasped it fully, we'll have attained the first insight.
Yeah.
The first insight occurs when we become conscious of the coincidences in our lives. Okay. So this is what we have to practice.
Okay.
Synchronicity, as it is called.
So do you think, just to help our listeners in terms of the practical aspect of doing that, for want of a better phrase, would it be helpful to keep a diary and note when you spot synchronicities, because then you might see patterns?
Any shamanic teacher always sings out, keep a journal. And I always believe in emptying your head with stuff and putting it down on paper.
Yeah.
Enables flow to work better as well, for sure.
Mm.
Right, synchronicity is the experience once having glimpsed, trying to manifest it all of the time. So once you have had that remarkable experience of, oh my goodness, that was amazing. Did you see what happened there?
Mm.
I can't believe those coincidences. And I've heard from people's coincidences some remarkable stuff, really remarkable. And once you've experienced it, you're thinking, gosh, why can't I be living like that all the time? Surely I should be living like that, which is yes, actually. And this is what the Celestine tries to bring forward in its teachings to help you how to gain this.
Mm.
And it is where we are all supposed to be. It's also understood, although again, it's a theory, that this is who we were once upon a time many eons ago.
Right.
And we're coming back to being these beings that are connected with the energy, shall we say, of star people or celestine people, maybe.
Yeah.
We are sensing again, as in childhood, that there is another side of life, some other process operating behind the scenes.
Mm.
And I remember very much feeling connected with this other expression that was around, that it always seemed to me that the adults had no awareness of.
So you had that from a young age?
Yeah, but it wasn't something they questioned or something that you could possibly analyse.
Mm.
It was just that you were aware of people's energies, their motivations, and their absolute delight from nature. What I now know was, it was drawing in this energy from nature that created the delight and the colours and the textures. This is what children have, and it's
innately, yeah,
just naturally, and coming back there. Right, this is talking about the critical mass, and it's saying critical mass this time would not be a fad or a trend or a fashion.
Okay.
This will be an absolute, completely evolution. The prediction is that the number of people who are conscious of synchronicity would begin to grow dramatically in the sixth decade of the 20th century. So this is something we can look back and
obviously
look into and recognise
now.
That
decade when we had the dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
That's the one. That's the one. That heralded the coming of this change, this area. And the alignment of planets that it speaks of in the song has happened not that long ago. We actually did have the complete alignment. So the energies and the magnetic energy that we experienced on Earth being in that alignment was phenomenal.
Right.
That's already happened. I shall look up the date because I've forgotten it. The growth would continue until sometime near the beginning of the following century, where we are now, when we would reach a specific level of such individuals' critical mass. Once we reach this critical mass, the entire culture will begin to take coincidental synchronistic experiences seriously. When a sufficient number of individuals seriously question what is going on, we will begin to find out. The other insights will be revealed one after the other. When we grasp the other insights, our culture will have shifted. Right, astounding, totally believe it, totally seen experiences and proof of how this all works. And wholly recommend it. That's the first insight.
Yeah.
And I will say, it is to take notice rather than think, oh, well, coincidence, one of those things, as certain scientific cultures try to impress upon us that we're only being woo-woo if we start taking notice of it. What it's trying to say is take more notice. And like you say, thank you very much, Ant-Man. What you're trying to say was, if we record these, even if it seems a bit woo woo and a bit silly, a bit silly, a bit soft. That's me patting my hands, by the way, everybody. I'm sorry about that. If we take notice of them, it helps if we record and date, because then we'll start to notice more and more. But you'll also verify the coincidences rather than them being sentimental silliness or fantasy.
Yeah.
It's noticing when they are no longer what you're looking at, sentimental happenings that or emotional sentiment that you're trying to create, or fantasy. When you see for yourself the proof that, oh my goodness, that was far too amazing and could not be put in the realms of sentiment or fantasy, then you know that you're onto it, and then you'll enable the next one to happen, and the next one to happen, and the next one to happen. Then you're stepping into, that's what the first insight is for.
I wonder if we could move on, so we've only got about less than 15 minutes left now.
Okay.
I wonder if we could talk about the second insight.
I'm going to read through, again, like I did before with the second insight. So it is to know, for people to know what to do with the first insight and then what to do with the second. I'll read through it and I think it will become quite evident. Is that okay?
Yeah, great.
Right, here we go. This is about the longer now, it's called, and historical background. A longer history perspective is required to understand how to work with this. A more correct interpretation of recent history, one that further clarifies the transformation. Without the longer perspective, you cannot believe in this transformation that's happening. You will do if you take it on. The second insight is necessary to validate our new awareness. Once we see the historical background, it validates the mysteriousness of our new insight, therefore enabling us to maintain it rather than shrugging it off and dismissing it as foolish. Mm-hmm. The history is not merely, this is where it's important, Anne, history is not merely the evolution of technology, but the evolution of how people think, of therefore of human thought. That shapes
everything. Everything begins with thought.
Well, without the human beings, the planet just naturally in its nature goes on and does its own thing.
Yeah.
When we're talking about life, we're actually talking about human experience, aren't we?
Yeah.
And this is where it's important. By understanding the reality of the people who came before us, we can see ancestors and all people that came before us. Mm. We can see why we look at the world the way we do and what our contribution is towards further progress. We can pinpoint where we came in, so to speak, in the longer development of civilization. And that gives us a sense of where we are going. Does that make sense, Ant?
Yeah, yeah.
It makes sense that, that we're in the middle of a process.
Mm.
But if we don't see that, we don't get it.
No.
We miss the point completely.
No.
So the longer now is looking back through history and seeing is that we are a part of it. Once we understand we're a part of it, we're stepping into the flow of this change that's happening, this evolution of civilization changing through man's thought, man's thinking and man's choices.
Mm.
Then we get an insight of where it's going.
Mm.
Okay. The effect of the second insight is to provide exactly this kind of historical perspective, at least from the point of view of Western thought. It places the predictions in the longer context that makes them seem not only plausible, but inevitable.
That's key.
So it's like, oh my God, this is where it's actually going, without any doubt. At the close of the 19th century, we will be able to see the whole history over a millennium. We will be able to identify a particular preoccupation of the Western civilization. How many people think of that?
No, it's true.
Until you do that, you just don't get it.
Mm.
It took 1,000 years to evolve the modern way of looking at things. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And to really understand where you are today, you must take yourself back to the year 1000 and then move forward through the entire millennium experientially as though you actually lived through the whole period yourself in a single lifetime.
Might take a weekend to sit there and do.
Well, I would suggest that people go online and do go through history, go back to 1,000 years ago and start looking at history and the events of history throughout those years, and make little notes of it, and then sit down and think of yourself being part of the experience of society through those decades, through those centuries. And sort of put yourself into that and be in a quiet space and go through it bit by bit. Make a note in your journal of what you think about, what you feel about, and go through it all. Now imagine it happened to you then completely in one lifetime, all of those changes. And then you start to get the importance of understanding the longer now.
Can I just bring in a point? In terms of seeing the longer now, from a conspiracy perspective, the interesting thing is that the conspiracy angle is that, you know, society for eons has been controlled by secret societies or foundations, you know, on a cultural level, and they have shaped the development of human culture and society from things like, you know, it was said that the Rockefellers funded the whole feminist movement. When really, what's interesting is when you consider the longer now, it's almost like the rug is pulled out of the hardened conspiracy theories, because there's this other level, there's this like higher level controlling events that's beyond human beings.
Yeah, that's an interesting... Yeah, I agree.
It's
like there's a direction going on, mm. and all of the experiences that human race are going through is part of the process. Mm. And that, never mind all of the political conspiracy stuff,
yeah.
beyond that, there is a greater story sure. going on.
Yeah.
And if we can connect to that greater story,
sure.
we can be a part of the changes that sure. need to come about, no matter how true or false... all of that conspiracy stuff in, because, you know, we really don't know how true or false it all is. And if it's true, it's quite alarming, but we can do something about it by taking responsibility Absolutely. For ourselves,
Sure.
working this process, connecting with this, what would you call it? Higher existence, this,
Yeah.
this, this greater energy, this, Mm. this, greater sense
more
of
profound existence
everything
almost.
That is
yeah
we can be part of the healing changes for everything.
And I have to say, again, talking about my experience when I was very much immersed in conspiracy research, when I was coming out of it and revisiting the Celestine prophecy, that was what helped me in a way become less obsessed by conspiracy theories, because I realized, oh, actually, if you want to call them the dark sorcerers, if you will, the controllers, maybe they're trying to fool us into thinking they have more power than they actually do.
Well, that's a great
it's
answer.
It's a double
that's
bluff.
It's a great
yeah?
answer.
Because when you consider mm. the longer now, mm. there's forces at play that no matter, you know, how powerful the secret society or whatever group it is, manipulating society, right? Well, there's forces beyond that that even they can't comprehend. And maybe they don't have a comprehension of.
I think possibly they don't. I think they're lost
no
in...
No matter how well-schooled
the
they are in
the shorter now.
The shorter,
I think they're lost in the shorter now.
The shorter now, yeah.
And it's about what I can gain from me now
sure.
and thinking that that's all there is. Mm-hmm. I think that that might be the case with people that maybe, if there is a truth to the conspiracy
sure.
and faceless people behind the politics, shall we say, controlling and long trolling, and they have a narrow perspective
well,
of existence.
What one researcher has suggested, and I like it very much, and he's a blogger as well, is that the divine or the greater force, right,
mm.
it's playing a very clever game with these evil dark sorcerers, if you want to call them that, because the divine is actually letting these dark sorcerers think they are the ultimate power, the
mm.
ultimate force, because what are they going to mm. do, ultimately, is destroy themselves.
Mm.
Yeah?
Can
He's
I...
almost allowing those circumstances, mm. if you like.
I would put it down, I would actually give my explanation would be more simple.
Yeah.
I'd say it's because we are in an energy system that is a duality.
Yeah, yeah.
So if there is any forces trying to control the human race and keep the best for themselves, shall we say,
yeah.
I think it's inevitable in a duality
sure.
Energy system.
Yeah.
It's inevitable that that will happen.
And
it's part of the experiencing that's playing off the one of the other so that we can have the experience to make the choices.
Yeah.
And this, the teachings that come in like this are to give us an opportunity to make a choice to detach ourselves from that.
Yeah.
And if there is something that needs to be done about it, there will be people in place and they will know that they are the ones to try and make changes.
Sure.
People like yourselves that were into conspiracy, you had no power to make any changes
no.
other than to have a whole human being, soul, spirit
yeah.
going down and down and down. Do you see what I mean?
I do.
And what good was that?
Yeah.
So to go, and which you discovered, to attach yourself to the learnings of something like the Celestine prophecies and
mm.
other such teachings
mm.
enables this unit of a human being who is a soul and spirit as well to lift and lift and lift, and then enable the 100th monkey syndrome of critical
sure.
mass to take place
yeah.
to enable the process to go through its changes.
Yeah, that's a very
oh wow, that was a quick summing up, wasn't
no,
it?
That's
but
very
that's
good.
How I see it.
Yeah.
I see that we're in a duality because we are there being faced with experiences
mm-hmm.
that we need to make choices and we need to go through to make changes. And that's what the whole process is about. This is what it's for.
What can I say? That's a wonderful description. I also think that the dark sorcerers, as I call them, actually, it's just a simple case of hubris as well, that they think they're the ultimate controllers, you know, that they
if they exist.
If they exist.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's possible.
And if you want to get really esoteric, of course, they are us and we are them anyway. So
it's all an experience. And maybe I'll tell you one day of my fast track illumination experience without psychotropic at all. It put me into the deeper understanding of what we're all about.
Okay, I wonder if we can wind things up now, Heather. We come towards the episode. It's been a fascinating exploration of the Celestine prophecy, and a new shift really for discerning consciousness to serialize a body of teaching. I would hope that as the months and years go by, that we'd obviously look into other teachings as well and serialise those. That would be really interesting to do.
And yep,
certainly with shamanic teaching as well, which you obviously have a lot. That would be fantastic.
I'm willing to bring it to the table. If you'd like to take it into discerning consciousness, that'd be great.
Fantastic, thank you. So just to tell our listeners, of course, if you've been intrigued by what we've been talking about today, please do go and buy all the books and the teaching guides of the Celestine Prophecy. It's a wonderful body of knowledge and teaching.
James Redfield.
Yeah, by James Redfield. It's fantastic. And just lastly, to finish up, we will be, over the coming months, we will be serialising this. So the next episode will be the third and fourth insight, and we will be bringing you some more insights on the Celestine Prophecy in general. I think we'll be talking a bit about Saint Celestine, is that right?
Oh, just tell you about Saint Celestine. I can barely say it. I haven't even had my glass of wine yet. But it is interesting, yes. And it was an understanding that I grasped, a theory. So I'd have to say it's a theory of mine that's connecting in other ways, which I found quite fascinating.
I'm going to be as fascinated hearing your knowledge on that as our listeners are, I'm sure. Just lastly, to finish by saying, if you have any points, if you want to make any input into the show, if you have any questions, if you have any criticisms, please do share them on our Facebook page, which is Discerning Consciousness. You can go there, you can message us. And Heather wants to share some of her information.
I just wanted to say, if anybody listening just wants to go along learning the insights with us, stage by stage, it sometimes helps if you latch yourself on to stages that somebody else is going through.
Sure.
It keeps you going through it. So please join us on these stages of learning.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And before we sign off, we're excited to say that we're off to Glastonbury.
Oh,
very soon.
Oh yes,
the
good
end of
old
March.
Glastonbury. Don't
so
we love
will
that?
Bring some material to all our listeners on future episodes of Discerning Consciousness, and we look forward to doing that. It's always a wonderfully delightful, curious place to visit.
And people.
Absolutely.
To talk to.
Yes.
Yes.
So thank you again, Heather. It's been a delight.
Thank you, Ant-Man.
And thank you everyone for listening. We're signing off now. Goodbye, everyone.